Well, why don't we go ahead and jump right into it. Here is the outline of the chapter. We're going to talk about the revolt of the commanders. David actually gets fired today. And David has a confusing complaint and departure. That's all part of letter B. But before we jump into that, I just need to make some introductory comments, which is going to be kind of a chunk of what we're talking about. We need to understand that chapter 29, the content of that chapter happens before chapter 28. In chapter 27, those of you that have been here through the series, you might recall that David makes a grave error. He loses faith. He really, I think, somewhat loses touch with reality. It's almost as if he's falling into some kind of depression. He's really struggling, and he's on the run. He's been on the run now probably around 7 years. He's tired. He's wore out. He has nowhere to turn, and so he decides to go into the Philistine territory. That's what he decides to do, and you can read that in chapter 27. It's interesting because in the last part of chapter 26, he says, "I believe that God's going to deliver me from my troubles," but yet he has a lack of faith. You don't have to raise your hand. I'll just raise it for everybody. But have you ever had a time of just lack of faith? And what we learn from David and we learn from Saul and all the people in the Bible, according to 1 Corinthians 10, it says the Old Testament is given to us for our examples. The reality of it is, as we look at these Old Testament characters, people like Moses and people like Daniel and people like David and people like Saul and all of these people, even in the New Testament, they are just like us. If you cut them, they will bleed. They are struggling with things in their personal life. And sometimes because of struggles we find with David and Saul, we, like them, don't always make the best decision. And so we find here, as we look at these particular verses this morning, there's only 11 of them. It's not very long. We find now the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek. Now, what I want to share with you is that we're going to go full circle. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 1, it says the same thing. The Philistines were gathered together at Aphek to fight the Philistines. And it's interesting in this chapter 4 because in verse 2 and in verse 10, there are two battles that are shared. And in both battles, the Israelites are really slaughtered. I mean, they are really completely degraded, fully. And then we find that through the second battle, around verse 11 in 1 Samuel chapter 4, we find that Eli's two sons die in the battle, the second battle, Hophni and Phinehas. And Eli, because of just what he saw and what he heard from that particular situation, that he falls over and he dies. And then as we look, the people of Israel panic. And they say, what are we going to do? We need to have somebody to lead our country into battle, just like all these other nations. And we find in chapter 8 and in verse 20 of 1 Samuel that it talks about that they wanted a king to lead us into battle. And the people turn from the leadership of God, and they look to a man to be their leader. That is never a good thing, is it, church? When we look to man rather than to God. And so they cry out to God, God, we need a king like everybody else. When we get to the point where we want to be like everybody else and what the culture has to offer us, we're heading in the wrong direction. And so was the nation of Israel. And God said to Samuel, I don't care what the people want. Go tell them it's a bad idea. And so Samuel, who was the preacher, he goes and he tells them, God says no. Tell God we want one. No, God says no. Tell him we want one. And then God does what Burger King does. Give them what they want and do it and let them have it their way. And they got their way. And I would submit to you clearly, and I can give you examples from my own life, God's way is always better than my way. And all of us could get up here this morning and give testimony how we've made decisions wanting it to do our way instead of God's way, and it hasn't turned out the right way. And so we find God who gives them what they want. If that's what you want, it's a bad decision, but I will anoint King Saul in the sense that I'm giving you what you want. Go right ahead. And Saul becomes the first king of what we call the United Monarchy. Saul served 40 years, then David served 40 years, And then Solomon served 40 years. And after Solomon, a lot of stuff happened. We don't have time to get into that. But the kingdom of Israel was divided between the north and the south. And they would not be united again. And from that point on, after those first three kings, Israel becomes a complete mess. So now we have a little context on what's happening. In chapter 27, David now is in Philistine territory. It tells us in that chapter he's there for 16 months. In chapter 28, while David is in Philistine territory, Saul realizes, because of chapter 28 and verse 1 and chapter 29 and verse 1 of 1 Samuel, it says they've gathered to battle. As we see in this first verse, it's the same situation in chapter 28, verse 1. He panics. He has nowhere to turn. God's not listening to him anymore. Imagine that, God not listening to you. But God was at the end with Saul. Grace had run out. And by the way, church, it takes a lot for God's grace to run out with you. But there does come a point, and this was Saul's point. And God said, I've rejected you, I'm not listening to you. There was nowhere for him to turn. So he stoops so low that he actually goes to a witch who lives at Endor. The term would be more properly used, a necromancer, somebody who claimed that they could talk to the dead. Now, she couldn't. I believe that most of she was a fraud, and that's why she was shocked when Samuel actually came back and had a conversation with her. But we find that he stooped so low, and in fact, he was the one that also made sure that all of the witches and all of these people were taken out of the land, because that was part of the law of Moses. But yet, apparently and obviously, they didn't get them all. And his men knew about this particular woman who lived there, so there he went. And that's how far down that he stooped to get an answer to what was going to happen. Now, chapter 29 happens before Saul goes to the witch and after David had gone into Philistine territory. So most theologians believe that somewhere between 3 to 5 days before Saul goes to the witch, that this chapter 29 happens. So chronologically in time, 29 happens before chapter 28, not after. Because we know that, because in chapter number 28, it's clearly enunciated from Samuel when he says to King Saul, you're going to die tomorrow, and your sons. It's interesting because, as we've already said, if you go back to Eli in chapter 4, he's going to lose his sons to the Philistines primarily because of his unfaithfulness and the unfaithfulness of his sons. And now, sadly, because of Saul's unfaithfulness, he's also going to lose his sons. Three of his sons, you can read in chapter 31, are going to find the end of their life clearly, coming up in a couple of weeks as we teach it here on the stage. So that gives you the background. Now, what happens in chapter 29? Here we go. The Philistines are gathering again. And while the Israelites were camping by the spring, which is in the valley of Jezreel, and the lords of the Philistines, who are these lords of the Philistines? Who are these commanders? The lords of the Philistines, or the commanders of the Philistines, were most likely the leader of each of the five major cities of the Philistines. Gaza, for example, Achish was the one that we're talking about, was the king of Gath. Then we have Eglon, Ashkelon, and there was one other one. And we find that they are the ones along with Achish. Now, if you were here a few weeks ago, you might remember that Achish is not a personal name. It's a title, like Pharaoh. But we call him Achish because we don't have his real name. And so while the Israelites were camping by the spring, which is in Jezreel, and the lords of the Philistines were proceeding by hundreds and by thousands. So this is going to be a mammoth war. And David and his men were proceeding at the rear end of the group of the troops. They're part of the troops. They're behind with King Achish, because you might recall David was promoted to be his number one bodyguard. What does that mean? Well, the bodyguard in ancient warfare simply means to protect your head. Well, what does that mean? It means exactly what I said. Because in those days, when a king or a major leader lost a battle, guess what they did with a sword? They cut off his head. That's why David cut off the head of Goliath. And he grabbed the head, and he walked with the head to show them that we have defeated you. You know, we have that term, you know, cut off the head of the snake. And we find that in chapter 31, in a couple of weeks, when we get there, you'll find out that Saul also gets his head cut off, and they take his head, and they put it in the temple of Dagon, their false pagan temple. That's where his head ends up. His body doesn't, but his head does. So now we have the context. Here we go. Then the commanders, there they are again, those five leaders along with Achish, they begin to complain to Achish. What are the Hebrews doing here? What's David's men doing here? They shouldn't be here. Now, why would they say that? Well, let me read a few more verses and I'll come back. And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or rather these years?" Well, it wasn't years. Even Achish had a tendency to say things that weren't really true, kind of exaggerates here. It was only 16 months. "And I have found no fault in him from the day he deserted from Saul and Israel to me." But the commanders of the Philistines became more angry with him as he began to defend David. And the commanders of the Philistines said to him, "Make the man go back, that he may return to his place." Where's this place? Ziklag. Remember, that's the area that Achish gave David when David asked, "Is there a place in your country that we could set up shop and I could bring my 600 troops and their families?" And they assigned Ziklag to him. "And do not let him go down to battle with us, or in the battle he may become an adversary to us. For with what could this man make himself acceptable to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of these men?" So what are their reasons? Well, in the previous slide and in this slide, there are really three clearly enunciated reasons why they were concerned, and they should have been concerned. The first one was from experience, because in chapter 14, around verse number 21, we find that Jonathan had gone into battle with the Philistines. And during that battle, some of the Hebrews, which same as Israelites, they had crossed over and they had joined the Philistines. But during the battle, they switched back to the Israelites. And so the commanders remembered this and they said, "Hey, we remember what happened. We don't want that to happen again. We don't trust this guy." You know, we've all heard the term, you know, you can't trust him as far as you can what? Throw them. Second of all, David's reputation. It's almost as if they said to him, "Haven't you been listening to the local radio station or the local podcast? Don't you know that song that everybody is singing in Israel?" And what's the song? "Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his" what? "Tens of thousands." Tens of thousands. And that did not go over well at all. And they said, "We believe that. And by the way, Achish, the people that they're singing about, those thousands and ten thousands that they've killed are our people, the Philistines. And we do not want that to happen again." And then their third reason that we read is that during the battle, if David and his 600 men join us, what better way to get back in the good graces of Saul than to turn on us and Saul accept him back as one of his military leaders? That's what's happening. Now, with all that said, David is between a rock and a hard place. Have you ever been there? You might be there right now. He has to be worried beyond our wildest imagination. Why, Jerry? Well, it's really simple. He can't go to Achish and say, oh, by the way, I've been lying to you. I'm really not loyal to you. I'm just hiding from Saul. He can't go into battle and fight Saul because he won't kill Saul because he's had opportunity. Remember, once in the cave and one in the hills, chapter 24 and 26 of 1 Samuel. Neither time did he take advantage. He could have killed the king, but he didn't because he believed that Saul was God's anointed. If he tells Achish, who's going to kill him? The commanders. The commanders will say, we told you, Achish. He's a fraud. He's a traitor. Let's kill him. What's he going to do? He can't go into battle, and he can't tell Achish. By the way, you ever been in such a jam that it looks like it's hopeless? This is the crux of the story, which is absolutely awesome. God has been working behind the scenes, unbeknownst to David, unbeknownst to Achish, unbeknownst to the commanders, unbeknownst to Saul, just like he works in the life of Jerry and Fred and John and Mark and Kevin, when they have no idea. Marian Rojas is a psychiatrist. She gave a presentation at the University of Navarro in Madrid, Spain. And she was addressing 600 colleagues in person and 800 online. And as she was given this presentation, you need to understand that a psychiatrist is not just a psychologist. They are also a medical doctor that have gone on for training, like a psychologist was due. So they have a real, real understanding of the mind and the body. And here's what she said in her presentation, and I want to read it exactly, because I think without any doubt, this represents all of us. Here it is. Here's what the doctor said. 90%, now I didn't do the research, it could be 70%, it could be 60%, I don't know. I'm just sharing what she shared. The psychiatrist said 90% of the things we worry about never happen. 90%. Let's just say it's 75%. Let's just go with a little benefit of the doubt. Say the doctor, maybe she messed up a little bit of research. So why don't we just say 75% of the things that we worry about never happen. And she goes on to say, yet those thoughts have a direct impact on our health. Now, I know that this is primarily for the 8 and 9:30 service, right? Has no bearing on any of us here at the 11 o'clock service. But the reality of it is, this is David. And he's wondering, how am I going to get out of this? We've all been, and some maybe right now are in a place, how am I going to get out of this? David's biggest problem up to this point is David. It's not Saul. David's decisions have put him in a place where now he can't move. He's boxed right in. He's boxed in a corner. I want to read the next couple of verses, and then I want to read one verse, and then we're going to close. David gets fired. Now, therefore, return and go in peace, David, that you may not displease the lords or the commanders of the Philistines. And David says to Achish, but what have I done? He says that phrase on three other occasions. Once to Jonathan, once to Saul. And notice, and what have you found in your servant? So here David acts like he's disappointed because he can't go into battle against Saul. Do you think he meant that? Of course not. Have you ever been with somebody when you're listening to what they're saying and you just know they don't mean a word of it? You know they don't mean a word of it. This is David playing up to Achish. That I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king. Who's his Lord the King? Well, could be Achish, could be God, could be Saul. But Achish replied to David, I know that you are pleasing in my sight. You're like an angel of God to me. Nevertheless, the commanders, the lords of the Philistines have said, he must not go up with us to the battle. Now then, arise early in the morning with these servants of your Lord who have come with you. Take your men, and as soon as you have arisen early in the morning and have light, you need to get out of here. So David arose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So how do we close this? Well, I put some things for just some thought, and I'll put those up here. Here's our closing slide. But I want to read a verse for you that's easy to read, but boy, it's hard to live. You know, I found that about Christianity. It's easy to talk, it's easy to read the Bible, but when push comes to shove, it's a little bit more difficult, isn't it? Here it is. You can write this verse down if you take notes. If you don't, you can just listen. Proverbs 21:1. The king's heart, not his organ, okay? The king's heart, his thought processes, his decision-making power is in the hand of the Lord. So here are the commanders. They think they're making a great decision. And in fact, they are making a great decision because they got David out of trouble, but unbeknownst to them, God was working where they couldn't see it. They were doing God's work. Unbeknownst to them. Let's finish the verse. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. It's not only the king's heart. Every one of our hearts are in the hand of the Lord. God directs it like a stream of water wherever he pleases. Isn't that something? So God in his sovereignty, God in his providence, that means God works where everything turns out for his purposes, knows that David can't die. Why? Because he's already given his word, he's going to be the next king. God knows if he tells Achish, the commanders are going to kill him. And God knows if he goes into battle, he could be killed. And God also knew the way for David to be king was not to kill the current king Saul. So God supernaturally works in the lives of the commanders, unbeknownst to them, to make this big plea to tell David to go home, which solves the problem. So David, like you and me, us, oftentimes, I'm just like you, are in a place where we almost are to the place in our own lives where we wonder, God, are you ever going to show up? Are you ever going to do anything? And unbeknownst to us, God has been working behind the scenes maybe for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, it just works out. Now, the worst thing to say is, wow, I really got through that, and I did that all by myself. No. God supernaturally holds hearts in his hands, and he directs them wherever he pleases. So just maybe, as we close this morning, the next time you find yourself between a rock and a hard place, and I know this is so simplistic that it's almost embarrassing to say, but I will. Why don't you and I just trust the Lord? Boy, that's deep, isn't it? And you know, if David would have trusted the Lord back upstream, he would have never gotten this predicament in the first place. But isn't it neat to know that even in our mistakes and in our sin and in our rebellion, God is still working? Praise God. So, Father, thank you today for working in our lives when we don't understand it, we don't see it, we don't get it. But, God, you hold our hearts in your hand, and you move us as the streams of water wherever you please. Not only us, but those around us. And we're thankful that we have a God who loves us and cares that much for us. Bless us this week in Jesus' name.